Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a quick digest of compelling legal issues and practical insights delivered to you in less than 20 minutes.
Hello, everyone. This is your host, Jim McGrew, Chief Client Services Officer at Ogletree Deacons. Thanks for joining us for another podcast. In this episode, we'll cover a topic that I'm sure many of you handle on a day-to-day basis, managing complex leave issues. The intersection of laws like the FMLA and the ADA can be quite tricky. So today we have John Stretton, a shareholder in our Stanford office, and Rachel Mandel, a shareholder in our Boston office, to discuss this important topic. John and Rachel, let's get started.
Thank you, Jim. So this is John Stretton here, and we will be talking today about complex leave issues, issues when an employee is looking for time off from work, whether it's for his or her health condition or a family member's health condition. And this is something that, Rachel, I imagine you'd agree, we get a lot of questions on this topic. Most people are calling us, pulling their hair out because they're saying, well, what do I need to consider? Do I need to consider time under the Family Medical Leave Act? But then how does the Americans with Disabilities Act play into that? My state has a paid sick leave law. How does that play into it? I've heard about this court decision out of the Second Circuit that provides for X, Y, and Z. How does that impact it? And then we have our own policies here. And I just got this new piece of guidance from the EEOC or the Department of Labor. How does it all fit together? I mean, I think that's often what we're called about and asked about. So that's what we're going to dive into and really talk about today is how do we make that all work together and come out with a consistent, correct answer to those questions. We are going to focus, though, today on the legal standards from a federal perspective. Depending on the state you are in, as I mentioned, there may be local leave laws, sick leave laws that you may have to take into consideration. And sometimes, believe it or not, the circuits will vary on how they analyze the situation. So let's dive into it. The two statutes that seem to come into play more often than not are the Family Medical Leave Act, also known as the FMLA, and the Americans with Disabilities Act, which we all always refer to as the ADA. And the interesting thing is while they often interact with each other and cause a number of questions, why is that? And I think the reason that is that there's two different goals for these statutes. The FMLA, the goal is to keep employees out of work. If you've got a serious health condition, well, then you're going to get some time off. It's going to be protected leave, and you get to stay out of work. Whereas you flip that, the ADA is really designed to enable employees to work. The goal is to bring employees to work with or without a reasonable accommodation. And yet, we're today talking about leave away from work and how the two statutes tend to work together. So, Rachel, why don't we, before we kind of dive into it, just take a quick overview of the legal requirements of the FMLA and ADA.
Yeah, good idea, John. We live and breathe this stuff every day. But as a quick reminder for everyone else, the FMLA allows employees to take up to 12 weeks of unpaid leave to care for yourself or certain qualified family members. You can take that leave either as one block of 12 weeks, if that's what your doctor says you need, or depending on the circumstance, you might be able to take it broken up into smaller amounts of time as your doctor says you need it. The ADA, on the other hand, offers protections to someone if they're a qualified individual with a disability, which means you must be able to perform your essential job functions with or without a reasonable accommodation. And the employer is required to make accommodations for employees who have a current disability and might need a reasonable accommodation to allow them to perform their job. There's no specific leave allocation under the ADA, but depending on the circumstances, leave from work can be a reasonable accommodation under the ADA. The other thing to keep in mind, John, is that the FMLA has certain standards that apply. Employers have to have a minimum number of employees. The employee has to work a certain number of hours to qualify for FMLA leave, and there's only that 12 weeks available. Whereas the ADA doesn't have any of those standards in terms of numbers of employees or the number of hours the employees work. So the ADA can kick in situations where the FMLA doesn't apply.
So it almost seems like when you're talking about leave under the ADA, there's a lot more gray area to work with and a lot more things to think from that perspective. So let's just dive into what I think is one of the main questions we receive a lot is how in the world can an employee get leave under the Americans with Disabilities Act? Because isn't attendance an essential job function?
That's right, John. Attendance is an essential job function, but a little bit of leave here or there, or even an extension of a longer leave, could be a reasonable accommodation. And that's the direction that the EEOC and the courts have been going in recent years. A leave that will allow the employee to get back to work in the near future. So for example, another 2, 3, maybe even 4 week extension on FMLA leave, that could be a reasonable accommodation. Or someone who doesn't qualify for FMLA leave, but maybe they just need a couple weeks off to recover from surgery, that could be a reasonable accommodation. So you're right, attendance is an essential job function, but sometimes a little bit of leave is going to be considered a reasonable accommodation.
What if someone comes to you and says, hey, I'm going to need 12 to 18 months. I'm not sure exactly how long it's going to be, but it's going to be a good bit of time. What do you do there? Is that reasonable?
We always recommend that every situation, you do an individualized discussion, have an interactive process with the employee. But it's pretty safe to say that 12 to 18 months, that's unlikely to be reasonable. That's really extended beyond the time allowed under the FMLA, and that's going to be more than I think even the EEOC or most courts would say is reasonable. The same applies for an indefinite leave, John. Saying, hey, I don't know when I can return to work. Maybe sometime next year, or, you know, hopefully I'll get back after Christmas, right? That's vague enough that probably you don't need to give that as a reasonable accommodation. But again, you should have an interactive process with the employee, talk about what they need, look at the medical documentation. Don't just come out of the gate and say, nope, you're done with your FMLA, nothing more.
Yeah, so I think, you know, even the EEOC and just about every court, they agree that indefinite leave is just not reasonable, you know, and it's just not something that you're going to have to provide. So I think, you know, what you're saying here and kind of try to package it up a little bit is that when you're talking about leave under the ADA, number one, it has to be reasonable. And how is it going to be reasonable? Is it going to enable the employee to get back to work in a reasonable, finite, short period of time? And two, is it going to impose some sort of undue hardship on the employer to give it? And I know that the EEOC's position for the most part is if it's not going to impose an undue hardship, then you got to give it. Has that been your experience as well?
That's right, John. I think that's right. So let's start at the beginning. How does an employee request leave under the FMLA?
So leave under the FMLA, there's quite a bit of guidance on this. And, you know, the regulations get into it as well. I think the most important thing that everyone has to recognize is that under the Family Medical Leave Act, there are no magic words required. So if you're waiting for the employee to say, I need leave under the Family Medical Leave Act, I mean, that's great if that happens, but you can't demand that that happens. As long as you hear anything about needing time off, whether it's for the employee's health issues or for health issues of his or her family members, then you got to start thinking about providing that employee their packet of information under the Family Medical Leave Act. And typically that packet will consist of, you know, a certification form to be filled out by their doctor showing that they have a serious health condition, how long they're going to be out for, whether the leave is going to be intermittent or in block form, things of that nature, and also some information on what their rights and responsibilities are under the Family Medical Leave Act.
What about under the ADA? How does an employee request leave?
Now, so again, you have to be very careful because there are no magic words under the ADA as well. There's very few employees that are going to come up to you and say, I need leave as a reasonable accommodation, because most employees won't even understand what all their rights are under the ADA. What typically happens is, hey, I need some time off to get treatment for my back. They may say something like that. And then you realize, you know what? You've been out a lot. You've used up all your FMLA time, but you may need have some time, some leave available in the ADA. So it could be a comment just that simple. Or my doctor has released me to return to work, but with restrictions. So then you got to dive in into the interactive process on the ADA and find out, you know, what are the restrictions? How can we accommodate them? Would there be a reasonable accommodation? Is it going to cause the company an undue hardship? That's the analysis. But the bottom line is, whether you're talking ADA or the FMLA, there are no magic words. Anything that puts you on notice that they may need some time off, and for the FMLA, it would be a serious health condition, and under the ADA, it would be to accommodate disability, you have to have that discussion. So Rachel, we've now talked a little bit about leave, how you request it, and overview of each of the statutes. Let's talk about, is anything unreasonable as far as leave goes under the ADA?
Yeah, that's a big issue that our clients struggle with. How much leave is someone entitled to? At what point is it just too much? So one thing that always makes me cringe, John, is when a client says, well, after someone's been out for, say, 14 weeks, we automatically terminate them. Anytime you're talking about an automatic termination, that's concerning. And that's the kind of thing that's going to get the attention of an agency or the court. So you want to think about what's the person asking, look at it on an individualized basis. How much time are they asking for? Are they asking for, let's say, a 4-week extension on their FMLA leave? Are they saying they can be back to work by the end of this month? Or are they saying that they just, maybe they need another 12 months, right? That's what you want to think about. Unreasonableness is going to come into play when the person's asking for so much time that it's taking you maybe into several months down the road or the next year. That's likely to be unreasonable. But again, you want to have an individualized discussion and go through that interactive process. The other thing that's an issue, John, is when there's no certainty that the person will be able to return to work. They come back and they report to you, you know, my doctor hopes I'll be able to do this job again, but he's just not sure. And I don't know when we're going to have any more information about that. That level of uncertainty may be enough that you can say, yeah, that's not reasonable. We don't need to provide that. And the last thing that you need to think about is what the employee is asking for. Does it qualify as an undue hardship? If this employee is performing some key functions, you really need them back, let's say, by the end of the year to do key reporting for your company, and it's going to be serious hardship if they're not at work during that time, well, maybe you can say that you can't give them that leave. But it's a pretty high standard, so I'd be very careful before saying it's an undue hardship for our company to give this person more leave. And you want to make sure, again, that you document that interactive process, and you don't just say, nope, we need you back at work.
Right, and I often find that when we litigate these cases, when our primary defense is that it's an undue hardship, that's a burdensome issue to litigate. There's a lot that goes into it, a lot you have to, you know, cover. And the thing is, it's the employer's burden there to demonstrate it's an undue hardship. So it means that it's all on us to be able to demonstrate why we could not give you this reasonable accommodation. So I find that when you're going through the interactive process, really focus more on what is the accommodation we can give this person, and is it reasonable? And try to avoid the undue hardship unless you have to.
That's right. And especially because someone having been out on FMLA for a few weeks or even a couple months, that's going to be some evidence that you were able to cope without that person at work. So to suddenly say, oh, it would have been an undue hardship to give 2 or 3 more weeks of leave, that's going to be a pretty high burden.
Agreed. All right. So we've talked now about how you request leave. We've gone a little bit through how much you have to give them. And now let's talk about returning to work.
Yeah, John, what does happen when the employee is ready to return to work? What rights do they have to reinstatement?
So employees definitely have reinstatement rights, both under the Family Medical Leave Act and the ADA. Now, under the FMLA, it's pretty clear. I mean, the statute actually provides for it. They need to be reinstated to the same or equivalent job, so long as restoring the person to the same or equivalent job will not pose an undue hardship. So, you know, there's that undue hardship concept again. Now, the interesting thing is when someone is returning to work under the Family Medical Leave Act, people often more often than you would want to admit, have an employee that says, well, I can return to work, but with restrictions. And when you have restrictions, then that's going to throw you into the ADA. And can we accommodate those restrictions? Do we have to accommodate those restrictions? Will accommodating those restrictions enable the person to perform the job, the essential functions of the job? So I think whenever someone is coming back from leave under the FMLA, and they talk about accommodations or restrictions, you always have to think about the ADA and your interactive process and talking it through with the employee. Now, when we're talking about the ADA, that you actually have to bring them back and restore them to their job. And an easy way to think about it is, so we talked about it at the very beginning, the goal of the ADA is to enable an employee to perform his or her job, the job they're in, you know, with or without reasonable accommodations. So if you gave someone late leave under the ADA, you're accommodating them to perform that job. And the leave is designed to bring them back to that job as soon as possible. So that means you do have to bring them back to that same job. so long as it's not going to pose an undue hardship. So under the ADA, you have to bring them back to the same job. Under the FMLA, to the same or equivalent job. And in both cases, so long as it's not going to impose an undue hardship. But the key is just talking to the employee, talking it through, the interactive process, finding out if there are restrictions, that sort of thing.
Yeah, John, one thing that you mentioned just now is important for everyone to keep in mind. The more you talk to the employee and the more back and forth you have and document that back and forth, the better off you're going to be. It can hurt you if you just have an absolute rule to say, nope, we don't take people back after leave has expired.
I think you're absolutely right. And that's the point here. You know, when you're talking about leave issues, it's really impossible to have hard and fast rules because there's always going to be an interactive process issue. So you can have rules, and rules are good and rules make life easy, but you always have to remember that if there is some sort of disability, and you know, disability is always construed very broadly by the courts, you need to talk. You need to have the interactive process and see whether there's an accommodation. So I think there's one last issue that we should probably touch on today before we wrap up is, and that would be, can we take intermittent leave under either one of these statutes? You want to walk us through that?
Yeah, absolutely. So under the FMLA, everyone listening to this probably knows employees can take intermittent leave if medically necessary. And that's even if it's unpredictable and even if it throws a monkey wrench into the employer's schedule and needs to staff. It can be unpredictable and somewhat difficult for employers to work with, but it's a legal right under the FMLA. Under the ADA, employees are allowed to take intermittent leave if it's a reasonable accommodation, but that reasonableness standard is going to apply. So unpredictable leave that is hard to schedule around and can really be difficult for the employer might not actually be a reasonable accommodation. The other thing to keep in mind is how pay works with intermittent leave under the FMLA and the ADA. Under the FMLA, you can have completely unpaid intermittent leave. So you could dock pay for the amount of time that the employee is not coming to work because he or she is on intermittent leave. Under the ADA, though, you're actually not allowed to dock pay if the employee is gone for part of one day. So you do want to think about, is this leave that's covered by only the FMLA or only the ADA, and make sure that you're aware of what those restrictions on docking pay are going to be.
Right. And I think that that's an excellent point. So under the ADA, when you are giving someone leave and if it's intermittent, what you need to do is to look at whether the individual is exempt or non-exempt. And obviously, if they're non-exempt and they're hourly, well, if they didn't work that hour, you don't have to pay them. But if they are exempt, exactly like you said, partial days, you're still going to pay the whole day. And in some states, if they worked part of the week, you may actually have to pay them the whole week, depending on the state laws. So that's something that you absolutely should be very careful about under the ADA docking pay issues. So I think that that's all we have for today, or all we have time for today. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Rachel, I truly appreciate it. And this is part one of a two-part series. The next time, we're going to talk about whether or not you have to provide leave for family members under both the FMLA and the ADA. We'll talk a little bit about no-fault attendant policies, benefits. What do you have to provide to employees that are out on leave, whether under the FMLA or the ADA? We'll talk about what you can do if you learn an employee is misusing leave. We'll also talk about some forced leave issues. So thank you very much for joining us today. We hope you found this beneficial and helpful, and we will talk to you all again soon.
Thanks, John and Rachel, for that great information. As John said, part two of this episode will cover issues like leave for family members, benefits, and what to do if you suspect an employee is abusing leave. I hope you'll join us next time. Until then, this is Jim McGrew. So long.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes or through your favorite podcast service. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.